welcome to our latest BRC podcast. My name is Carl Monk, Director of Insight at the BRC, and we're joined today by two transformation specialists. We have with us Matt Clark, Managing Director and a Retail and Consumer Specialist, who's previously worked at KPMG and across a wide variety of transformational roles within the retail and consumer sectors. We also have with us Brian Colmes, Managing Director and a Leader in Digital Transformation from Alex Partners. And prior to Alex Partners, Brian spent several decades as a Managing Partner for retail at Accenture, as well as working in a variety of other consultative roles. The BRC are partnering with Alex Partners to launch our new State of Trade report. Every quarter, we'll be discussing the largest trends happening in retail transformation and looking at the key KPIs and how they've changed quarter to quarter.
So to kick us off, question to either of you, really. So, you know, some of our retailers are probably less familiar with Alex Partners than others. Could one of you potentially give us a brief rundown of, you know, your role in supporting retailers and what that entails?
So, yeah, let me just kick off. Thanks, Kyle. The role of Alex Partners, I think most retailers in the UK would have come across Alex Partners in a couple of different contexts. Either in a restructuring sense, which obviously gets reported in the press quite widely, but actually the more than two-thirds of the work that Alex Partners does in the UK and indeed globally is now with healthy companies doing operational transformation, large-scale cost reduction, dealing with the implications of channel shift, you know, from stores to digital, etc., and driving productivity, and effectively doing end-to-end transformation and turnaround within the sector. And that's where we're seeing an enormous amount of opportunity and growth in the current sector, in the current marketplace, obviously.
I think that mention of opportunities is a valid one. So in our most recent retail sales figures, we saw in September, I think sales rose on a total basis by 5.6%, you know, the largest single year-on-year month of growth since 2009, obviously massively driven by online, which was up sort of, you know, 30 or so percent, while stores remain in negative territory, but still recovering. So I guess, you know, Brian, it'd be interesting to hear a bit of, you know, your work at Alex Partners and what that entails in the digital space.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. So as Matt described, increasingly, we work with healthy companies who are looking to strengthen. And most of my focus is in the area of digital, which is a much used word, and people define it very differently. But essentially, I think the best way to think about digital is from the consumer's point of view, because consumers don't make a distinction between their shopping habits by channel. They simply now expect to be able to interact with all retailers in a digital way, whether that's in a transactional sense or purely informational. And I think we have seen, as you referred to early on, just how much change there has been in the last few months. And clearly digital is at the forefront of that, both in terms of channel shift, but also in terms of a much broader demographic of the retail customer becoming familiar and comfortable with the online space. So we've seen a very significant shift in usage amongst the older consumers. And it's impossible to imagine this be one of the things that springs back once we get out of the current crisis. So I think we'll look to see much more work with our clients, our customers, as they adapt to a far more digital and information-based world.
It does certainly sound like part of this sort of increase in market in share of spend that we've seen in digital will persist, you know, at least in the sort of medium term, but perhaps even in the long term as well. So I guess expanding on that point, and I'll stay with you, Brian, if you don't mind, but you know, the consumer response to COVID obviously has, you know, as you said, accelerated many of the existing trends in retail, digital being, or the adoption of digital, particularly by demographics who perhaps didn't use it quite so widely before, being the most obvious. But, you know, it's also created new market dynamics. It's altered the course of other behaviors amongst consumers. You know, what are some of the other key standouts that you've seen, you know, through your work?
Well, I think we've seen an adaption to different technologies. So it's not simply a case of the ease of use of a website. People expect that the retailer will have a better and more informed view of the customer. There's been this observation for some time that those retailers who have a better understanding of their customers will do better. And I think, you know, it's not just the recommendation engines that we see, but people that are steered better through websites and better customer dialogues. And I suppose it's quite interesting to note that we're seeing born digital organizations, so those that have never had stores, having a different sort of interaction with their customers, because for them, the customer information, the use of data is something which is so inherent that they're not having to retrain people in the use of information. So those people who've been perhaps more stores-based have had the more traditional retail paradigm that as long as the stores are well presented and the range is right, they can still attract customers without really understanding who those customers are or why they're in the store at that particular point. I think the growth of better quality information, a better understanding of how people browse, why they make purchasing decisions, the pattern of demand during the day, all of these things are things which digital retailers are a lot more comfortable with. And I think we've seen traditional retailers looking at the digital now, seeing that growth in share, seeing the rapid spread of digital into other demographics, and saying, actually, this is not just our largest store anymore. This is a fundamental shift in the way that people will be buying. And I think that's going to be a very interesting challenge. We've always known that people like shopping. They like the physical and social experience of shopping. But that's, you know, as that is denied to us at the moment for most people, they'll look at those who have a very strong digital proposition.
Interesting. And are you seeing amongst the retailers who perhaps haven't or hadn't adopted that data first approach, are you seeing them putting in place measures to increase, I guess, their understanding of their customers within stores as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the trend has been to that in any case. What we are seeing is an acceleration rather than a sudden invention. I mean, there are very few retailers who weren't down this path to some degree. What we'll see, I think, is the digital communities within a retail organization now coming forward with, we have known about this for some time, here's what we need to do to address it. And hearing, and we are hearing that a lot of our retail clients are shifting their spend away from some aspects of store into digital. They're looking at store labor patterns. They're looking at the customer demand patterns, the physical layout of stores. Obviously, a lot of the grocery retailers are having to repurpose physical space to be used for home delivery now. I think it will force changes in the way that capital is spent and in the way that retailers organise for what they expect to be the next few months worth of change. I think one of the very interesting things will be, we have talked for a long time around the importance of the in-store experience and how retailers need to make their stores a place where customers want to come. Right now, of course, that's something which is not a focus. And that idea of an exciting in-store experience is something which is going to have to take a half a step back while the digital experience is strengthened.
Yes, difficult to manage or improve experiential retail in the current climate. And Matt, do you have any points that you'd like to raise to expand on that sort of acceleration piece that Brian touched on?
Sure, yeah. As Brian says, I mean, the acceleration in digital adoption is obviously enormous. However, we're also seeing some other real changes in consumer behaviour and indeed in how retailers are responding. So the impending recession and the reduction in discretionary spend and uncertainty in the market is clearly going to drive a price war, both in grocery and also in certainly for discretionary products, apparel being the most obvious. So we're seeing this sort of emergence of, you know, real drive for value and seeking the best possible price. But at the same time, We're also seeing a real drive for values as well. So this is the sustainability and the ethical sourcing agenda, which has really accelerated again over the last few months. And I think as part of the pandemic, consumers' consciences have been very much to the fore, and the adoption and seeking out of retailers and brands who are really authentic in the way that they come across and in the way they deal with their supply bases and the way they deal with their employees has really accelerated in importance for most consumers. However, what we've got now got is this sort of value versus values dichotomy. And for those that can afford it, you know, values have clearly become significantly more important. And as I say, the sustainability and ethical credentials of the brands and retailers they shop with has become much higher on the list of reasons to shop or not shop. And you're seeing a lot of retailers responding to that in the way that they are making pledges around whether it's zero carbon or whether it's the way that they deal with their suppliers, the source of the fabrics or whatever it is that they're selling, etc. But then on the other hand, as the recession bites, there'll be a real drive to value. So for those that can't perhaps afford anything other than the most urgent and necessity type products, then I think this will become a very different agenda item and perhaps much more of something that others worry about. So it'd be very interesting to see how this plays out over the next few months as the recession bites and as those value-oriented retailers have to make a decision about whether to include, to what extent it's possible to include ethical sourcing credentials, sustainability pledges, and at the same time offer the best possible value to those customer demographics that are really seeking it.
It's a very good point, that value versus values dilemma, as you call it. So, you know, we've had, I think, 50 or so retailers sign up to our climate change roadmap. It's definitely something of huge import to consumers who, as you say, can afford it. But yes, the economic headwinds we're facing may well shift priorities in the not too distant future. So, you know, we've covered quite a lot of ground already, but, you know, I think we've been talking about a fundamental shift in retail for quite some time now. And, you know, it always seems like there's a new challenge or insurmountable hurdle that the retail sector is facing. You know, how is it different this time? You know, what are the fundamental things, you know, beyond what we've discussed already that are really unique in terms of what will change going forward?
Well, let me just kick off, Carl. I think as everyone knows, many retailers are facing something of an existential threat given the rapid transition online and therefore the lower productivity in stores. The need to readdress both the cost structure and the way in which customers are attracted and retained and marketed to within most retail businesses has fundamentally shifted over the last few months. And as we all know, many of these trends were already in existence before the pandemic, but the urgency and the financial imperative to address those issues has just sort of doubled overnight, effectively. So the need for change and the urgency which to overcome some of the, you know, very genuine legacy issues and both cost, technology and cultural issues that were getting in the way of making these changes beforehand when they weren't quite so urgent has now been blown away. And you're seeing many retailers do this. So certainly with our clients, the determination of the CEO and the executive teams and the boards to fundamentally reassess how the business model and the cost structure that goes with it works to provide a sustainable business moving forward has just become, you know, significantly higher on the agenda. And indeed, I think many leaders have really found, this sounds really odd, but many leaders have really found the pandemic in some ways liberating in terms of being able to address some of the deep-rooted issues within the business that perhaps just were too difficult beforehand. And the level of disruption, both for consumers and for employees and for management within these retailers has never been as high, obviously. So therefore, people's ability to accept and go on a journey of change to fundamentally reassess how people work has never been, you know, more opportune in many ways. So I think we're seeing some real shifts, I mean, in terms of new channels. So you've seen the sort of live chat and the phone channel becoming even more prevalent, especially in specialty retail, doing research online or on the phone, and then booking appointments to come in to a store to physically try something on or have a consultation, etc. So new channels have emerged in terms of customer acquisition, new accelerations in the way that personal marketing has been adopted using data from online transactions and loyalty schemes, but also fundamental reassessment of how businesses work, both in store. We've seen enormous shifts in productivity tools and the adoption of digital technology to drive productivity in store, but also in head offices as well. And this sort of perspective of, you know, never the same again, and shall we work fundamentally differently in the way that head offices function. And, you know, many of our clients have sort of taken a real step back and said, well, actually, what do we need to do in our office? And is it that, you know, 25% of our people probably do need to be in our office, and 25% may visit every now and again, 25% maybe once a month, and 25% of people maybe we don't need so much anymore, because what we've worked out is during the pandemic that we can work in a fundamentally different way and be more efficient by cutting out unnecessary work and still be successful. So we're seeing some really hard challenges across the piece, whether it's, you know, in customer acquisition, whether it's in the channels, or whether it's in the head office and supply chain, and shifts that have been, maybe they've been coming for some time, but perhaps, you know, would never have happened this fast or been this radical had we not seen the pandemic.
So it sounds like from an opportunity perspective, the pandemic's actually sort of allowed companies to sort of take a hard look at themselves and sort of provided a ability to disrupt in a way that they hadn't previously. Interesting. And Brian, on the same point, I guess, for you, what is different this time?
I guess, you know, Matt's covered a lot of it, but I think the role of technology in enabling the different shifts is something which is very much of the time. You know, if this pandemic had struck 20 years ago, I think we'd have found it much less easy to adapt to new operating models. Most people were not familiar with this type of technology that we're using today. Most people didn't have the computing power or the bandwidth at home to be able to operate this way. And in addition to those sort of basic technologies, people have looked at other technologies. So automation is an obvious one, as well as the artificial intelligence, and started saying we can actually now introduce these technologies, partly because we have to, we simply can't function without them, and partly because this may be the best opportunity to do it when our employee base is at its most flexible and most challenged, and therefore most open to the idea of working in a different way. And I think what we've seen in previous recessions is they have been driven by typically fall off of customer demand, and retailers have tended to respond by focusing on cost and downsizing to meet the customer. This obviously has been driven in a very different way. And so I think the smarter organizations that we work with have very much said this actually is a catalyzing opportunity. We are going to do things differently. We've seen lots more of our clients take, if you like, a zero-based approach to how they're looking at these changes, and saying nothing needs to be adapted. Everything can be reinvented, and if you like, all bets are off. So what has worked historically and what previous generations have become expert at doing, that doesn't necessarily apply. Our traditional views of breadth of range, price architecture, and obviously physical location, which were already challenged by the digital growth, are now really things that can be slayed, if you like, as myths, now that we have a different customer with a different expectation. And, you know, and unfortunately, we have obviously seen a significant reduction in labour in a number of parts of the industry, and you know, I don't think that's coming back. So even as we see retail regrowing in terms of customer demand and actual trading volumes, I think just about every retailer that we speak to is now saying, "Well, I've kind of learned how I can do this with a smaller headcount." Not obviously in all areas. I mean, people have had to step up the capabilities in terms of home delivery and in-store picking. But by and large, across the enterprise, people are saying this is the moment where we will embrace the digital technologies, which will enable us to operate with a lower headcount base. And I think that's going to be a very fundamental shift, possibly as great in retail as some of the traditional manufacturing industries went through several decades ago.
Very interesting points. And on the employment point, you're completely right. So, you know, obviously grocery has been sort of quite publicly hiring in high volumes to meet the demand or rising demand in online, whereas other categories perhaps haven't been quite so fortunate. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the year. And equally, we've seen, you know, anecdotally or heard that there have been, you know, significant reductions in, I guess, the amount of time to iterate on, technological innovations and that sort of life cycle of you know, validation, testing and rolling out has shortened hugely over the pandemic. So thank you for that, Brian. So to round off the conversation today, I think we're quite clear now that change is inevitable. It's the expectation, consumers aren't behaving the way they were before. Retailers have to adapt to ensure survival. You know, it'd be good to get a sense of what you feel that means for UK retail. So, you know, what do they need to change to respond to these new market conditions?
Well, let me kick off, Carl. I think we're seeing, I guess, five key trends across the industry. All targeted around creating a more sustainable and agile and relevant customer experience and business model that can survive and thrive into the future. So first key trend is a real drive for simplicity and accountability and underpinning a whole bunch of agility. So the ability for organizations to take out complexity, make it really clear who's accountable for what and how people are held to account to deliver. And then building agility throughout the organization. Agility has become, I think, the single most important business capability for survival and ultimately success moving forward. So you can take advantage of changing market conditions, change the way you serve your customers, the cost structure that you operate, your ability to go to market in the right way at the right time, etc. So that's number one. I think number two is all about data and really data intelligence, and by which I mean the successful use of data science and digital technologies, both at the front of the business, obviously, in terms of customer engagement, but also increasingly at the back of the business as well. So the productivity imperative, the ability to use data to make decisions in real time and to support the agility imperative that I mentioned a second ago. The third thing is really taking a good hard look at the overall costs of the business and this sort of zero-based approach. So rather than incremental change, fundamentally looking at how the business will operate differently moving forward and then designing from a blank sheet of paper, if you like, how the business will work to ensure all of the extra costs are eliminated and that only the things that are really adding value are being put in place. And probably taking for the first time a genuine enterprise-wide view of that. So rather than doing it in the individual functional silos, just to look at the end-to-end business, starting from the customer and working back through the functions of the business into the supply base and making sure the whole thing is stitched together properly. Number four is network coordination. So really leveraging partners of suppliers are obvious, but really using the capabilities that everyone who works together can bring to provide the optimum customer proposition, but also to do so in the most economically viable way moving forward. I think increasingly through this pandemic, everyone has realized that the interconnected nature of the business world that we live in is even more important to develop partnerships and relationships that really work both for the customer and for the economics of the business cycle. And then finally, I think this, the other real trend is how leaders are behaving and how people are taking, if you like, the opportunity of the pandemic to drive a high performance culture in a way that perhaps people have been afraid to drive through in previous years. And really sort of building on the data-based decision-making imperative, driving through some very difficult and important decisions in a really rigorous way and helping people to deliver it so that the organization can be steered safely through these sort of very difficult waters that we find ourselves in at the moment. So I guess they're the sort of trends that we're seeing. And by executing that, what we're really seeing is a sharpening of the customer value proposition and also a real sharpening of people's ability to drive economic, sustainable economic improvement. And ultimately, of course, what's happening is we're seeing a market consolidation and those that fall by the wayside will either disappear forever or they'll be snapped up by the multi-brand consolidators or other organizations who will see an opportunity in a brand that has value for the long term. And you will end up in a couple of years' time with a smaller but significantly more robust, agile and sustainable industry moving forward. At least that's what I hope will be the case. The optimist in me is driving towards an industry that will emerge in a year or two's time from the outside of this pandemic in a significantly stronger place, both in terms of customer relationships, but also in terms of fundamental economics of the industry.
It's great to hear a positive outlook for once, Matt. So the evolution of the industry rather than the Armageddon that we sometimes hear in the news. And I was very happy to hear that data intelligence featured so prominently in your list of what retailers can do. It validates my career choices quite nicely. And Brian, did you have anything to add to that on building on what retailers can do to respond to new market conditions?
Well, I certainly share Matt's optimism. I think the industry has proved time and time again that its focus on the customer and its adaptability to whatever market conditions it faces is a strength. I think we saw at the height of the pandemic, when the world was even more uncertain, actually finally some appreciation for retail as a key industry and as something which enabled us to keep going. The importance of frontline retail staff in keeping a supply of product to customers. And one would hope that going forward, people continue to recognise the importance of retail, the value that frontline staff play. So very much in support of other campaigns to ensure that retail staff can operate safely. I think as Matt said, it will be different organisations that will survive. It is likely to be the more agile organisations and those that seize the moment to pivot into different offerings and different ways of addressing their customer. It is not going to be we'll come out of this in the same shape as we went into it type of recession. So those points around agility, use of information and focusing on how the organisation, the retail organisation, will change both in terms of its physical changes, but also in terms of perceptions of the importance of information over the importance of gut, I think will be another big shift that we see coming out of the pandemic.
And with that, I'd like to close off today's discussion. A huge thank you to Matt and Brian for taking the time to speak with us today. We've just launched our new State of Trade report, so you can find that on our Insight Hub. Aside from that, thank you for joining us and goodbye for now.